Dia de los Muertos is a festive celebration in memory of those who have died. Its origins in Mesoamerica go back 3,000 years, even though it was shaped by two Roman Catholic holidays, All Saints' Day and All Souls' Day. In southern and central Mexico, Dia de los Muertos entails many traditions, building private altars called ofrendas, honoring the deceased using sugar skulls, marigolds, and favorite foods and the beverages of the departed, and visiting graves with these gifts and decorating the graves there. It is a time for celebrating the wisdom and the laughter and the insight the dead shared with us while they were alive, and remembering that for all of us, life is a temporary condition.
Good morning.
Good morning.
A couple of weeks ago, in the beginning of October, I shared that my father had just died during our joys and sorrows time. Through my tears, I don't think I even really got out his full name, but today, in celebration, I would like to share a bit with you about my dad. His name was John James Michael Moss. And my dad was a nice guy. I mean, a really nice guy. He was kind and courteous, hospitable, polite, friendly. He had a way of being in the world that made people smile and feel appreciated. And this kindness wasn't something that he stored up for family or for special occasions or for parties, and he did love to party and cook gourmet food and have a celebration. But he took that kindness with him just through the ordinary journey of life. So this includes destinations in his daily routine to maybe go to the Home Depot, or to the local deli, or to a restaurant, it's called the Barnacle, that was his favorite place for chowder. And he took the time to learn people's names and really lived in those brief moments when you meet someone that can be not a stranger, but potentially a new acquaintance, or seeing a familiar face. When my sister Roberta and I went to the Publix grocery store, this is just a few days before he died, I thought to myself, I bet my dad knows at least one of these checkers. He might know the guy at the deli counter that we're ordering from. And who knows, it's likely that he talked with them and chatted with them, talked about his children and his grandchildren, who he really liked to brag about. And in turn, he would have learned something about them and kept that memory and conversation going. My dad knew his neighbors, and he made several lifelong friends that way. He was active in the neighborhood. He threw the holiday block party for the kids. He worked and organized with others to improve the neighborhood, planting shrubs, installing lights, having meetings. And my father's good nature was contagious. The day that my father transferred to a hospice facility, really just 2 or 3 days before he died, we heard a knock at the door and opened it. And there was just the most eager, cheery 8-year-old who wanted to know, does John have any trash to take out? Turns out the boy, and I knew of the friendship because my father talked about it, he became friendly with the family in the unit below him, and they had an ongoing exchange of neighborliness. So when I think about our UU principle, our first principle of the inherent worth and dignity of every person, I tend to go big picture. I think of very important issues that are vital to our world and to myself. You know, I think of the Syrian refugee crisis. I think of the racial disparities in our criminal justice system. I think about the educational opportunity gaps in our schools. But the way my dad lived really gives me another thing to think about, and maybe something for all of us to think about, which is that our first principle is something that we can live out wherever we go, whether you're at the Fred Meyer, or you're at the dog park, or even at the edge of your driveway. So I'm reminded that every interaction is an opportunity for kindness. Thank you.
Earlier this year, I was confronted by this reality unexpectedly at a workshop for directors of religious education, which is, for those of you who don't know, my position at the church. The shorthand for that is DRE, so I don't have to say director of religious education every time. Anyhow, as some of you may know, in the church world, there are regular ministers and regular DREs, and there's interim ministers and interim DREs. And the interim, the word interim means like in the meantime or temporary. Interim ministers and DREs are the people who do the jobs while a church is in the process of finding someone who can do it on a longer basis so that we don't have to go 6 months or a year without a minister or a DRE. Anyhow, at this workshop, we were talking about something probably not that interesting, like keeping attendance records or something like this. But the person leading it said something that sort of snapped me out of it, which was that you should always think of yourself as an interim DRE, because one way or another, everyone's going to leave their jobs. While there was a very practical aspect to this advice, like you should leave a map for the next person so they know how to do the job, there was another way of looking at it, which is that we're always in the process of passing a torch on to the next generation, and then we're always only here temporarily, whether we think that way or not. So much of the time, though, people, myself included for sure, go around with a vague sense that we're more or less always going to be here. And the way we live will about be the same, and the people we love will be here tomorrow, and the day after tomorrow, and the day after that, long and long into the future. And of course, if we think about it, we know it's not really endless. Of course, we all know that I won't be in this job, or we won't be alive for 7 billion years, or even 1 million, or 1,000, probably even 100. But it seems to be so far off that we don't really need to take it into account in terms of how we actually live. And when we see things this way, it lets us become a little lazy, a little less sensitive, maybe a little less interested in life, because there'll be another day to talk with this person. So I don't really need to bring anything up important right now. I can do the things I really want to do later on, when I have enough money, when I have more energy, when I have less problems. Maybe I'll appreciate life when something special happens, but right now, today, this, the way life normally is, what's the big deal? When we live with this mindset, we have lots of times for distractions and avoidance, things that don't really make us connect with our hearts. They just give us a small feeling of happiness and fade away quickly. In this way of thinking, we don't feel great joy and we don't feel great sorrow, and we live in a very small world of emotions. Coming together, though, in the way we're doing today is important because it offers us a chance to expand our world. It gives us a chance to be sad together. It gives us a chance to celebrate people together. And it gives us all a reminder that what we have is precious and won't last forever. Sorrow, loss, and grief are visitors that will drop in on all of us throughout life. Today, we open the doors to them because it is through those same doors that joy, love, and gratitude can enter as well. We join together to hold the huge spectrum of emotions that we're capable of feeling and to honor them all, as they cannot exist without each other. I'd like to finish by sharing a quote from Francis Weller, an author and psychologist who specializes in the process of grieving. "There's no way to be spared sorrow. Everything I love, I will lose, and that's the harsh truth. But you either have to shut down your heart and miss the love that is around you, or wrestle with that truth and come out the other end. There is indeed such a thing as a joyful sorrow." And the work of a mature person is to carry grief in one hand and gratitude in the other and be stretched large by them. How much sorrow can I hold? That's how much gratitude I can give. Thank you all for being here today and sharing deeply of yourselves.